Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When Ravana was engaged in the battle, the trunk of the elephant which carried the king of heaven, Indra, broke in pieces, having collided with the chest of Ravana, and the scattered broken parts illuminated all directions. Ravana therefore felt proud of his prowess and began to loiter in the midst of the fighting soldiers, thinking himself the conqueror of all directions. But his laughter, overtaken by joy, along with his very air of life, suddenly ceased with the tingling sound of the bow of Ramachandra, the personality of Godhead. Purport. However powerful a living being may be, when he is condemned by God, no one can save him. And similarly, however weak one may be, if he is protected by the Lord, no one can annihilate him. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Shri Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Shri Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Panu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pachata Deshatarini Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Paramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanya Mishwaram Hare Krishna. Today is the most auspicious disappearance day of His Grace Dayananda Prabhu, one of the most stalwart devotees and disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Dayananda Prabhu's Tithi is in the Vaishnava calendar, His disappearance day. He has influenced so many devotees for so many years now, four decades after His passing away. Still devotees remember Him with great fondness. When Srila Prabhupada was in New Vrindavan in 1973 or 74, one devotee asked Him in front of all the devotees that, Prabhupada, what will please you the most? When Srila Prabhupada heard this question, and there were book distributors sitting, there were DT pujaris, there were preachers, everyone was sitting there. So each one hoped that Prabhupada would say that that particular devotee's service was most pleasing to him. So the devotees were distributing books. They thought Srila Prabhupada would say, if you distribute my books, I'll be most happy. Or the pujaris thought, if Prabhupada said, if you worship the deities, I'll be most happy. But Srila Prabhupada's answer was very endearing to all. For the question, what will please you the most, Srila Prabhupada said, if you love Krishna, I'll be most happy. So this is Srila Prabhupada's desire. And devotees like Jayananda Prabhu, whose hearts are filled with love for Krishna, when we come in contact with them, we also develop attraction for Krishna. Jayananda Prabhu's service attitude was exemplary. He was a civil engineer by his graduation, his academic qualification. Yet to support the temple, he would work very hard. He would drive the taxi the whole night after working hard in the temple whole day just to get Lakshmi and funds for the temple. And he would render the most menial service with the greatest enthusiasm. And that's why he was so dear. There are so many pastimes of his wonderful qualities, how Jayananda Prabhu influenced so many devotees to dedicate their lives to Krishna. A devotee would come, and he is the pioneer of Rath Yatra. At every Rath Yatra in ISKCON, we have Jagannath Baldev Subhadra on the carts, we have Srila Prabhupada's deity, and we also have Jayananda Prabhu's photograph. Srila Prabhupada said that we should always honor him and glorify him in all our Rath Yatras. He would make Rath Yatra cards with great enthusiasm and devotion. He would remain awake whole night. Some young person would come in contact with devotees. He would be very inspired by Jayananda Prabhu. And that person would join ISKCON and he would render a lot of services. And later on he would become the temple president and he would be the leader or GBC. But Jayananda Prabhu would humbly and menially continue to serve in the same mood, in the same way, right from beginning. So we have such stalwart devotees who dedicated their life. And all that he got, all the Lakshmi he got or he earned, he gave it to Srila Prabhupada. Even during his last days, when he was leaving his body, he was on bed. When devotees went to see him in the hospital, they were bewildered. Because on the bed, he was not taking rest in the bed. He had kept Srila Prabhupada's photo on the pillow and put a garland there. And he was sleeping on the ground next to the bed. So then devotees had to convince him to take rest in the bed. So he used to feed prasadam, lots of prasadam to devotees who came to Krishna consciousness. And many people, after Jayananda Prabhu passed, many strangers, they had nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, they declared that Krishna consciousness must be a wonderful process. And it's a great process because if in Krishna consciousness there are people like Jayananda Prabhu, that means this process is perfect. That was the power of his personality, that he attracted so many people to Krishna consciousness. So today we can remember him and seek his blessings and aspire to also serve devotees and Krishna in the same mood. Isgrav Jayananda Prabhu ki jai. Also we'd like to continue and conclude the discussions on Ramayana, which we began 4 days ago. So we were discussing the three reasons or three levels at which we could see the pastime of Lord Ram sending Mother Sita away to Valmiki Muni's ashram. Yesterday we discussed in great detail the concept or the principle of dharma conflict. How we have many duties to perform and how when these duties conflict, when two right things, we have a conflict of two right things, then it's very purifying and very much a struggle to decide what to do. And we discussed in great detail how Mother Sita was also not a very timid person. She was very assertive and she knew her dharma and she happily accepted the decision of Lord Ram. And then today we'll discuss two more reasons. The second reason is a leadership lesson. Yesterday after my class, one devotee came to me and said, Prabhu, you spoke so much about Lord Ram being a king also and also a husband, so there was a conflict of duties. So are you trying to say that a husband's duty is not important and a king's duty is more important? So I had to tell her that no, husband's duty is also very important. But we have to understand what is the lesson that Lord Ram was trying to teach in his incarnation. He came with a specific purpose and his purpose was to be an ideal leader. An ideal leader will sacrifice everything, even his love, even what he loves the most. So to teach that lesson, that was a specific purpose, to set an example of an ideal leader or a king. That is the purpose of Lord Ram. So if you want to see an ideal husband, if you want to get inspiration from the character of an ideal husband, then we need to see Lord Krishna's pastimes, how he took care of 16,000 wives or somebody else. But Lord Ram, of course, Lord Ram also took care of his wife very well. But his primary purpose of incarnation, he was to show how our leader behaves, how a king behaves. So in every incarnation or most incarnations, Lord fulfills a specific purpose. Like for example, Parashuram. What did Lord Parashuram do? He annihilated the warrior class 21 times, right? Now, as Buddha, what did Lord do? He taught non-violence. Now, can you accuse Parashuram that why did he not practice non-violence? That argument is baseless, because that's not what he came to do. The purpose of his incarnation was different. Or you cannot accuse Buddha that, you know, why was he so non-violent? Why did he not take action? As Lord Krishna, the Supreme Lord, cared for all his 16,000 wives. In fact, he went to the extent of even lying and even cheated to protect his devotees. Of course, that's transcendental. But the point is, Krishna is Lila Purushottam. He has performed sweet pastimes. He was the incarnation of a lover who broke all rules to reciprocate with his devotees. Isn't it? How Krishna reciprocated with his devotees is so wonderful in the Bhishma section with Arjuna. Krishna would do anything to protect his Bhaktavatsala. So he would do many things. Even Lord Ram is Bhaktavatsala, but his primary purpose was to teach how a true leader, how a king is willing to give up what he loves the most for a larger good. That was the main thing that Lord Ram taught by his example. So we take that lesson. That doesn't mean Lord Ram was not loving, or that doesn't mean Lord Ram was not fulfilling his duties. So Lord Ram is the same as Lord Krishna. He is the same as Parashuram. He is the same as Buddha. Yet he primarily performed pastimes to suit the purpose that he came to serve. Krishna also, he performed dance with many covered women in Vrindavan. But Ram, he never did that. He was strictly devoted to one wife. So we cannot reverse the roles of Ram and Krishna. You know, Krishna would steal butter. Krishna would speak so many lies. Now you will see Ram as a very obedient child in Ayodhya. In fact, there are no pastimes of childhood of Ram. Hardly any pastimes. So you cannot reverse the roles. You will not see Krishna in Vrindavan speaking always the truth. Of course, he is the absolute truth. But you will not see him, you know, very strict. Krishna is filled with rasa, pastimes. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Bhagavan ki, Jai Shri Gaur Nithai ki, Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Jai. So this is the way we see Ram and Krishna. We don't see Ram stealing butter. Have you heard pastimes where Ram is going around in Ayodhya houses? So that is the way Lord Ram's character, he came to perform that pastime. So we need to approach Lord Ram. We need to study Lord Ram in that context. Like, you know, even now there are people who have misunderstood the purpose of incarnations. For example, 530 years ago, the Lord appeared as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's main? How did he appear? In the Varnashram system? What was his? What position did he take? As a sannyasi, right? He was a Brahmin sannyasi. He was a renunciate, he was a monk. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had no dealings with women. But that was the way he was, that is Krishna. But Krishna, he danced with so many gopis. Now there are people who are not understanding the Lord's purpose, have mixed the incarnations. There is a group of cheap spiritualists these days in Bengal. They are called as Gauranga Nagris. This is one of the upper sampradayas. Like we have Aul, Baul, Karta Baja, Sakibeki, Srila Prabhupada said these were all deviant sects that came up after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disappeared from this world. One of them is Gauranga Nagris. So what they do is, because they don't understand this second reason which I am explaining about the purpose of the incarnation. So what they do,
they do very cheaply, they mix Lord's pastimes. And they imagine themselves to be gopis, the cowherd women, and they want to do Ras Lila. But they want to do Ras Lila not with Krishna. They want to do Ras Lila with Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu. You may think, what is this? But they are convinced about it. They say, who is Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu? They'll ask you, who is he? And you will tell them, he is Krishna. So, we are performing Ras Lila with Krishna. But they are having Lord Chaitanya's deity, they are worshipping Lord Chaitanya, and they are doing Ras Lila with Lord Chaitanya. This is, they claim he is none other than Krishna. So, we accept. But they refuse to acknowledge that he is in the role of a sannyasi. Isn't it? Similarly, Lord Ram is an ideal king first, an ideal leader first, and then also a loving husband. And he fulfilled both roles perfectly. But when the duties conflict, he performs those duties to teach us the principle of selfless leadership. So when devotees are taking inspiration, they take inspiration from Lord Ram, how we need to give up what we love or what we want to enjoy for our sense gratification, we need to be ready to give it up for a higher cause. That's why if you see in the Indian politics, I'm not sure about now, but in the earlier days, in the beginning of the 20th century and during the independence struggle, Lord Ram's character was portrayed as an ideal leader by the founding fathers of Indian independence movement. In fact, many politicians, they would worship Lord Ram. In fact, we grew up reading Ramayana and Mahabharata written by C. Rajgopal Achari. Rajgopal Achari was one of the most prominent authors. His books were read by every Indian child who's growing up in India when we were young. Sri Rajgopal Achari is Ramayana and Mahabharata. And Sri Rajgopal Achari was the last Governor General of India. And it is very interesting how he was made the Governor General. Lord Mountbatten was the Governor General of India. And he went on a 5 to 6 months vacation to England. He went back to England because his sister was getting married or something. So he told Nehru, Vallabhbhai Patel and other Indian leaders that you should take over my job, my service. And they said, we are already busy with so many things. So they appointed Rajgopal Achari temporarily, that you take care of this. So when Mountbatten returned back after 6 months, he was shocked by the reports he got. Because Rajgopal Achari, he had a huge palace. The Viceroy of Governor General, Viceroy of India, he used to have a huge palace. The Rashtrapati Bhavan now, in India you see it has more than 500 rooms. And if you read in Wikipedia about Rashtrapati Bhavan, you will be bewildered. The way British made this building. Because they saw that the Indian kings and Indian Maharajas have a lot of very opulent palaces. So to compete with them and to ensure that the British supremacy is unrivaled, they made this Rashtrapati Bhavan, which we now call as President's House, huge. It's mind-blowing the way it is, the decorations and the opulences in that building. And Rajgopalachari had the whole thing for himself for 6 months. But when Mountbatten came back, he was shocked to discover there are more than 1,000 servants there and it's a huge thing. He was shocked when he got the report that Rajgopal Achari just lived in one room. He used only one room and he slept on the floor. He washed his own clothes and he ate food only once a day. He led a very austere life. So he was not simply writing Mahabharata and Ramayana. He was living a life of, as a leader, he set an example of denying himself pleasures. So Mountbatten was shocked. Then he convinced Nehru and Patel that he should be the Viceroy. He should be the Governor General. Such an ideal leader. So this was very common earlier. Leaders not taking position for themselves, not enjoying, but serving. This is what Ramayana teaches. Bharat's example, Ram's example. In fact, when the Indian tricolor, the flag was made, there is a saffron color in that. If you see Indian flag as green, white and saffron color. So when the announcement was made, the explanation given was the Indian flag has a saffron color because saffron represents fire, saffron represents renunciation and sacrifice. So every Indian politician and Indian leader should remember the Indian flag and should remember the saffron color and be willing to give up whatever is needed for serving. Sacrifice is the primary duty of an Indian leader, Indian politician. So that is the way it was presented. So So this is the way Ramayana is teaching us, the principle of sacrifice, an ideal leader. So many leaders. India's second prime minister, the first prime minister of India, the less spoken about him is better. I don't know much about him and it's very controversial. But the second prime minister, Lal Bahadur Shastri, ideal leader. He had nothing, he had no positions. He had a salary of, I think, something like 300 rupees, which is very meager. And one of his friends came to him. He's a prime minister of India, drawing a salary of 300 rupees. And one friend, this is a true story, one friend came and told him, I need a loan of 1,000 rupees, can you help me? He said, my dear friend, I just have 300 rupees and, you know, I hardly spend any money. And I'm hardly able to meet my ends, so I can't really help you. I just have, my salary is just 300 rupees. And after 2 days, this friend came to Lal Bahadur Shastri and told him, thank you, I got the loan I wanted. Your wife gave me the loan. He was shocked. He went to her and asked her, how did you manage to give him 1,000 rupees? She said, you know, your salary is 300 rupees. You give me all the money and I'm able to meet all the expenses of the household things in 200 rupees. The 100 rupees I've been saving for the last 10 months. So there were 1,000 rupees left. So I gave it to this, your friend. He said, really? Immediately wrote a letter to the government of India saying that my actually monthly expenses are only 200 rupees. Please reduce my salary by 100 rupees. There were people like this till recently. This is what Ramayana teaches. Not to enjoy anything. Not for me anything. Just give up. Just serve, serve, serve. So that is the main lesson of Ramayana. And these leaders, they lived by it. Even now, the present politician, the Prime Minister of India, you know, after the election campaign, there is a rule that for the next 4 days, you're not supposed to do any, there is a 4 day period when you're not supposed to do any campaigning before the counting begins. So those 4 days, he was sitting in Murari Bapu's Ramkatha, just hearing every day quietly. He was one amongst the thousands of people who were there in the audience, just absorbing himself in the spirit of Ramayana. And he has now introduced so much of reforms in the VIP culture. He said, no, there will be no VIP culture in India now. You know, there will be no red light indicating that a VIP is coming. He said, everybody is equal. You know, we should serve. He's always talking about service. So I'm not saying whether he's a good man, bad man. I'm not getting into the politics part. I'm just saying the principle of service, sacrifice. This is the very, very important part of Indian ethos. And Ramayana teaches us this principle. So this is the second level at which we see this pastime. And that helps us accept Lord Ram's character. So this is the second level. What is the first? The Dharma conflict. What is the second? The leadership lesson. And the third is very interesting. And that is, the Lord has his own agenda for coming. Just like we do things because we have an agenda. Lord has an agenda of, what is that? It's an internal reason. The Lord wants to enjoy the mellow or the rasa of vipralamba bhav, or love of his devotees in separation. See, when two lovers meet, there is happiness. But when they are separated, the intensity of emotions that are churned in the heart, that is very rich. The pain of not being with your beloved, it strengthens the lovers' bonding, the hankering to be with each other, right? That is what they promote, that is what they talk about, and that's a principle, that's a law. We see that happening. But of course, in the material world, it's a little different. In the spiritual realm, distance makes the hearts grow fonder. But in material world, far from sight, far from mind. That also happens. But generally, when there is love, we see that there is hankering, there is wanting to be together when they are separated. So this principle applies even in a relationship with God. So the desperation that the Lord and his devotee like Mother Sita experience when there is separation, that is a greater devotional ecstasy than physically being in the Lord's presence. So if you see this in the Ramayana, Ramayana is filled with this. I began the Ramkatha series with the pastime of the Valmiki hunter seeing the hunter kill a crouncher bird. The birds were mating, and that female crouncher, she starts lamenting in separation from her partner. That sets the mood of Ramayana. Separation, crying. So Ramayana is filled with crying actually. When Lord Ram was banished to the forest, what happened to Maharaj Dasharath? If you read Dasharatha's plight, you will cry. You know, you just can't imagine how Dasharatha's, the pain that he went through. The citizens of Ayodhya, they felt such deep pain of separation. There is a whole description I remember once reading, how Lord Ram's chariot is now leaving Ayodhya and Dasharatha is holding on to his wives, Sumitra and Kaushalya, and is running behind to see the chariot. And he is looking at the chariot and all the citizens are with Ram and the chariot is going. The description is just like the gopis feeling separation from Krishna as he is leaving Vrindavan. The same way we see Maharaj Dasharatha feeling. Bharat felt this separation. And there's an old and simple woman named Shabari who waited for years to see Lord Ram. So all this exemplifies the Vipralamba Bhav. So Ramayana is filled with these pastimes. So that we also, when we read this, when we hear this, we can develop the mood, you know, oh Krishna, oh Lord Ram, where are you? When will I experience your presence as I chant Hare Krishna? You know, we need to increase that. Unfortunately, we don't feel that separation. We are so separated from the Lord that we are not. So we need to increase that feeling that Krishna, I want to be with you. So Sita and Ram's separation is a pinnacle of this emotion. It's like the highest exhibition of this emotion of Vipralamba. So the time they spent in separation for those 12 years when Sita was living with Valmiki's ashram, that churns the hearts of the reader with tenderness. A reader, when he hears this, he becomes soft-hearted. So, actually, this is a paradox. This is the most beautiful paradox, that there is a lot of pain in Ramayana. There is a lot of suffering. Definitely. But the beauty is, this is deeply nourishing. When we read this, it is irresistible for the reader or for the hearer. And, you know, usually when you read a tragedy, what happens? Like, what is that, Romeo and Juliet? It's a meaningless tragedy, actually. It's pain. It's pain. They both die in the end, and it's a lot of... But if you see the suffering in Ramayana, there is suffering. But Srila Prabhupada said it is that suffering in Ramayana, when we read, Srila Prabhupada gave a very nice example. He said it's like hot chutney. What is hot chutney? It is the sauce that Indian cuisine we use. You know, the chilies and the spice in that chutney, when you eat it, it burns the tongue. Ah, it's so hot. But at the same time, it tantalizes your senses, you know. It's like you want to have more of it. I know Western devotees may not like chutney, but I'm talking about Indians. They find it hot. It burns the tongue, but they want more of it. So Srila Prabhupada gave this example, saying that, you know, the separation when we read about the pain we read in the scriptures, the pastimes, the devotee is going through pain, the Lord going through pain of separation. It is like, oh, why this is happening? But then it's so nourishing. Srila Prabhupada also gave another example, hot sugarcane juice. Sugarcane juice is very tasty, very sweet, but at the same time it's very hot. For the temperature makes one uncomfortable to drink it, but the sweetness of the sugarcane juice, it entices you to drink more of it. So that's how Ramayana is. And because of this, what happens, you know, for devotees who are feeling an emotional vacuum in their life, because there's a lot of, let us accept this world, life in this world is filled with crying. And the Bhagavatam says, that there is every person, Shokashru Sagara Visho Shanamatyu Dharam. And the Lord Kapila Devi's instruction says that every person has so much tears in his life that tears can fill an ocean. Each person has his or her own story. But when we read this, pastimes of the Lord crying, the devotee is crying for the Lord, that emotional vacuum gets filled and that ocean of tears gets dried up. So, at least I have seen that Gaur Leela and Ramayana, Ramkatha, it has a very powerful potency to fill that need of devotees. And so, these are the two other reasons for the way we can see Lord Ram's pastimes. Therefore, Ramayana is a very, very special scripture. So this whole discussion that we had for the last 4 days was how Ramayana teaches us these three. We can see the pastime of Ram sending Sita through these three levels. And this is the reason why, if you see, the Ramayana had an influence all over the world. It's not simply a scripture of India. Ramayana has had worldwide influence. Of course, modern day people, they don't talk about it because that may not be very popular to talk about it, but it's a fact. In every country of the world, somewhere Ramayana has had influence. But it may not be promoted so much. Like one of the Indian sannyasis, a few years ago, he went to Ethiopia. Ethiopia is in Africa. And that time, this famous ruler of Ethiopia, Haile Selassie, he's one of the most last dictators and emperors of Ethiopia. He ruled for almost more than 60 years. So when this sannyasi went to Ethiopia and he met Haile Selassie, the emperor, he wanted to give him a gift. So he had taken from India. He said, "What gift can I give this emperor?" So he thought, "I should give him Ramayana because India's wealth is Ramayana." So when he gave this Ramayana, this emperor was standing with all this royal people. He smiled at our Indian sannyasis and he said that, "You know, you will be happy. I thank you for giving us Ramayana. But you will be happy to know that we are all descendants of Lord Ram." And it's not simply, you know, he just spoke it. He gave logical explanations. Even you can check it out on the internet. You can go to the Wikipedia page on Ethiopia. And the first thing you will read on Ethiopia is Ethiopia, the land, people in Ethiopia, they are called as Kushites. They are descendants of Kusha, Lava and Kusha. Lord Ram had two sons, Lava and Kusha. And Kusha's descendants are called as Kushites. So Ethiopians are even today known as Kushites. They come down from Kusha. In fact, the country is known as Kushadweep, the island of Kusha. And in fact, the Ethiopians not only accept that they are ancestors of Kusha, they don't have access to Ramayana, and you know, for different reasons, which we won't go into discussion today. For different reasons, Ramayana or Vedic culture or Indian scriptures have not been promoted in the world. But the Ethiopians, they quote the biblical story of, you know, in the Bible, there is a story of Kush being son of, not Ram, Ham. It's a phonetic misnomer for Ram. So what this means is, this only confirms the widespread influence of Ramayana. Even in a land, Ethiopia, which is what, 3,000 miles away from the main land of India. So phonetic, it describes the way spoken words are, the way they sound or the way we pronounce them. I know one researcher, I've read his whole article on how he explains. I'm not advocating this or I'm not endorsing this. But he's written a whole research paper on how Rome was once known as Ram. And he had all these reasons, but I don't even remember that. But I'm not even endorsing it, but I'm just saying that if we closely examine the names of various places across the planet, you can logically deduce how the culture of Ramayana must have influenced the lands. It must have influenced to a great extent, even thousands of years ago. Now, Ethiopia is one. Egypt is further, I think it's in the north. If you see Egypt derives its name from Ajpati. Ajpati is one of the ancestors of Ram. He's one of the ancestors of Dasharatha Maharaj. In fact, even today, if you see the legends in Egypt, you will find many references to Dasharatha Maharaj, who is the father of Ram, in Egypt. So Egypt is further, it's 5,000 miles from India. So there also, there is an influence of Ramayana. So the traces of Vedic age can be seen all over the world. In Iran, for example, even today they have this culture of reverence towards fire. And what is fire? It is a essential sacrificial tool in Vedic yagyas, Vedic life, Vedic process. Armenia, one devotee came from Armenia. He said in Armenia, they have an ancient structure and everybody talks about it. It's called as the Temple of the Little Blue Boy. There is no deities inside that temple. But even if you go to Armenia, if you search Armenia on the internet, you know, this is a common phrase they use. The land of the little blue boy. Who is that little blue boy? Your guess is as good as mine. A French historian even claimed that the original Armenians were actually worshippers of Radha and Krishna. So see, now this is not difficult for us to understand. You know, it's not that we are simply saying, oh, jai Vedic culture. No, not. It's there. It's logically explained in the scriptures how this all happened because of Parashuram. Parashuram was a great warrior. And he destroyed the warrior class many times. So when he was killing the Kshatriyas, the Kshatriyas fled off to faraway lands. And they settled there. That's why if you see in the second canto, Srila Prabhupada talks about this very famous verse. Kirata hunandra pulinda pulkasha abira shumba yavana kashadaya enecha papayada pashrasha shudyanti tasme prabhavishnam. So there he explains about how each land is some part of the world. He says Abhira is Arabia, and then he speaks about Mongolia. He speaks about different lands according to the map of the Mahabharata. So these warrior class, these people, they ran away in fear of Parashuram and they settled over there. And what happened over a period of time, because these lands were far away from India, the main land of India, the culture of worship of Rama and Krishna, it kind of deteriorated. It kind of went down. And if you want to see strong culture of Ramayana outside India, you can see in the nearby regions, near India, the Southeast Asian regions. You see Indonesia, you see everywhere. Thailand, what is Thailand's national epic called? Ramakien. It is the translation of Ramakien is Glory of Ram. Thailand Ramayana is their national book. It's a national epic. In fact, till the late 18th century, the capital of Thailand was what? Now it is Bangkok. But till recently, the capital was Ayutthaya, derived from Ayodhya. That was their capital. And even today, if you see the history of Thailand, all their kings are known as, like in England, you have what? Prince, what? Some common name you have. I read in France, they have a king, Henry the 16, 14. So in Thailand, you will see all the king's name is Rama 1, Rama 2, Rama 9. All Rama only. So it is very common. In the Ramayana, we find Maricha giving great detailed description about his life. Maricha, he explains to Ravana, he is in fear of Ram. He says, when Ram was 16 year old, he shot an arrow at me and I fell 800 miles away in an ocean, and then I swam across and I settled in an island, small island. And he doesn't say it, but that island where he stayed, the place where Maricha stayed became Mauricha. Mauricha is the modern day Mauritius. And there is people accept there in Mauritius. Our devotees, they accept that it was a land where Maricha had settled, because that is the place Lord Ram had disposed him of. So basically, what I'm trying to say is, Ramayana is not a story that simply belongs to India. That is the point. Ramayana is one of the most powerful stories in the history of the world. Just like, you know, you have Bible. Bible, as I mean, you know better. You know, you are from this. You have lived here more. But I think. In India also we accept Bible has played a pivotal role in shaping the history of the world, Western world. Everywhere you see, if you read novels or if you read old books, if you appreciate art and history in the Western context, you will find some biblical references here and there. Isn't it? Bible is kind of an integral part of the Western history and Western civilization. Similarly, you will see that Ramayana has shaped the whole of entire Asian civilization. And today in China have their own Ramayana, you know that? I don't remember the details, but they have their own version. Korea has their own version of Ramayana. Indonesia, they have their own version of Ramayana storytelling. Indonesia is incidentally the largest Muslim country in the world. And there if you go, all the tourists are taken in Bali and Jakarta. And one of their most attractive things they show the tourists is a puppet show on Ramayana. Japan recently created an animation film on Ramayana. Now this is very interesting. An animation film on Ramayana made by the Japanese, for the Japanese audience. No Indian involved there. And in India, you will find over 300 different versions of Ramayana. Right from South Indian languages to Urdu and every language. Basically, it has, Ramayana has captured the imagination of people all over the world. And slowly, slowly, it is reducing because of the other influences. But in Asia, it's still there. I think some years ago, the Warner Brothers, they made a Hollywood film called A Little Princess, where the, I've not seen the movie, but I've heard about it, that the main character in that movie is a little girl called Sarah, and the main, the whole story revolves around her narrating the pastime of Ramayana. See, if see, Ramayana is basically, it has an universal appeal. And why Ramayana has a universal appeal? Because it has all the ingredients of a good story. It has a hero, there is a princess, there is a damsel in distress, and there is a villain. And the plot and the twists and turns in the story, it's a great thriller. There is adventure, there is romance, there is action. It's all there. But there is something more in Ramayana. It is Adi Kavya. It is the original poem. It is a poetic masterpiece that can just, as I told in the first class, generally novels and movies, they entertain. But Ramayana not only entertains, it enlightens. And it can actually shape our destiny. It can make us take important decisions. It can convince us to lead a life based on certain values and principles. And unfortunately, modern scholars, they denounce Ramayana as fiction or mythology. They just, today in India, my God, there are so many novels on Ramayana. You will be bewildered. One of the biggest authors now is Amish Tripathi. He has written a novel on Ramayana where it's complete hodgepodge. Now he talks about how Mantra was gang raped and how Ram was sent away because he couldn't manage the kingdom properly. It's all concocted Ramayana, and people are reading it, buying it, and there are seminars held on these books. So, but we need to, as devotees, we need to know Ramayana is not some fairy tale born of the, you know, some brains of some creative writers. No, it is a product of divine inspiration. We discussed on the first day. It's revealed in the heart of a devotee by the Lord Himself. In fact, when Lord Krishna was present on this planet 5,000 years ago, Ramayana was read every day in the palace of Ugrasen Maharaj in Dwarka. In the Bhagavatam, we find this. Prabhupada writes in one purport also that, you know, if you see, Shukdev Goswami has devoted only 2 chapters to Ramayana. Because Ramayana was spoken and Ramayana was known to all the people, even in Krishna's time. So you can imagine how old Ramayana is. And as we grew up in India, I remember reading so many different stories of devotees of Lord Ram and so many pastimes. There is one I grew up reading was Ramdas. There is one devotee called Ramdas. Recently, he is from Bhadrachalam in Andhra Pradesh. Beautiful poems on Lord Ram. And he was in the 17th century recently. And it's a true story. He was arrested by the Nawab for some financial discrepancy. He was a tax collector for the Nawab, king of Hyderabad. Because he was not able to show proper records, he was arrested by the king. But interestingly, although he was a great devotee of Lord Ram, Jai Shri Shriyada Gokula Nand ki Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki Jai. Although he was a great devotee of Lord Ram, he did not blame the Lord. And meanwhile, as a collector, he had also constructed a big temple for Lord Ram. So the king got suspicious that this guy is taken away money and he's used it to make the temple. So when Ramdas was in the jail, he wrote some of the most beautiful poems glorifying Ram, and he had a special rasa with Lord Ram. He wrote poems saying, scolding Lord Ram, that why have you put me in jail? And I made this temple. Did I take money from your father? I made all this beautiful jewelry for Mother Sita. Did our father Janak Maharaj give me money? This is my hard-earned money and I'm using it to make a temple for you. And you are getting me arrested. So these are some of the poems I remember reading as I grew up. Very sweet, rasic poems. And then this king becomes shocked because 2 young boys come to him. This is all documented history. The king was shocked that 2 young boys came to him. One greenish complexion and one golden complexion boy. And they came and they told him that you have wrongly arrested Ramdas. He's a nice man. And the 3 lakh rupees deficit, we want to pay it to you. So they paid the deficit. They got the receipt. They got the stamp and the seal of the Nawab. And they got Ramdas released from the jail. And Ramdas was shocked. He said, why am I released from the jail after spending 2 years in the jail? He went to the king and asked him, why have you released? When the king told him the description of the two boys who came and paid the money. So Ramdas was shocked. An ordinary devotee, when he hears this, he would be so happy and he would glorify Lord Ram more, saying that, oh Lord Ram, you are so nice. But Ramdas, his rasa with the Lord was so sweet that he doesn't glorify. He scolds the Lord more in his poems. He says, who is a devotee, my dear Lord? Me or that king? I am your devotee. I am always chanting your names and you give darshan to him. What did he do? I deserve to get your darshan. So like this, there are many devotees like this. So Ramayana is very, very special. And as as we discuss these three reasons, I personally try to remember when we are discussing Ramayana, or tomorrow Narasimha Chaturdashi is coming, whenever these festivals of Ram Navami or Narasimha Chaturdashi come, we also need to be a little sober and we need to remember characters of Ravan and Hiranyakashipu. We need to remember the villains also, because we can connect, our desire to enjoy, the anarthas in our heart. We need to kind of connect to those characters also. Ravana represents a lust. And Hiranyakashipu represents what? Greed. Tomorrow is Narasimha Chaturdashi. So we can meditate how Lord Narasimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu. We can meditate how Lord Ram killed Ravan. And we can meditate on our own anarthas and how we want to get out of the entanglements by taking shelter of the Lord and Lord's pure devotees. So these are the three reasons that I wanted to discuss. Lord Ram sending Mother Sita. The first was the challenge of balance. Second was the leadership lesson, understanding the purpose of the Lord's descent. And third was relishing the vipralamba bhav, or the love for the Lord in separation. So these are the three ways Lord Ram, these are the three levels at which we can see this pastime. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.